This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast, and we're coming to you pretty much straight after the defeat of Brighton at the Amex Stadium in Brighton. We're actually here in our Brighton studio. If you listen to it in the background, if you can't hear it amongst all the people chatting, which is thrown in there a little bit, we've got the sea in the background. We're actually, the studio is actually overlooking the sea here. This is not a virtual joint at all. This is a real joint. And after last night's game, to be quite honest with you, we needed a little bit of relaxation. We needed something to actually calm us down, because what was going on the pitch, and it's not the players' fault, wasn't really the one for us. I'm sitting here with Lainey in our seaside studio. Lainey, how are you?
Well, good. What an incredible view this place is. Yeah, it's stunning. Just sitting here looking at the waves crashing. It's a bit like our season at the moment. The waves came crashing down on us last night. It was, with the injuries and becoming a bit of concern. Luckily, we've got a lot of points in the bag. Not a lot, but we're not in a relegation dogfight or anything like that. But yeah, it's a bit of a concern as we're facing another tricky away day at Sheffield United at the weekend. But yeah, an interesting one last night, Bill.
Very interesting. Like I said to you, we've got plenty to talk to on this podcast. Really difficult doing sort of podcasts when they whack a game right in the middle. Whack a day here on a Wednesday. So we got a game on the Wednesday and then trying to do a podcast as well. If you could check out as well, prideofwest.london, we put out a fairly short post-match podcast after the game. And like I said to you, that's out there. You'll hear what some of the fans have said of that on this podcast a little bit later as well. But what else we got on the show? On the show today, we have got, what have we got? We've got the fans after the game as well. We've also got the Gowler Bees breakdown, giving us a statistical and a tactical lowdown on the Luton game, and also looking forward to the game at the weekend against the Blades. Also, we've got JB with lots more facts and funk. And also, just to get the Blades view, we got Ian Rands from Four Blades in a Pub podcast. Okay, so Four Blades in the Pub. We don't actually quite go down the pub. I know, we know that feeling, actually. Lockdown killed that one as well. So Four Blades, not in a pub podcast. Got Ian Rands from there, actually going to give us a lowdown on the Blades. But tell you what, a conversation in the pub last night, actually. Four Bees in the pub last night. A bit of a late night as well last night, which is all good in Brighton. It's Tuesday night in Brighton, you could always find somewhere to go. Or Wednesday night, that's right. Should have been a Tuesday, but they moved it to a Wednesday for Amazon. Always find somewhere to go, so we found somewhere to go. And like I said, you Four Bees in a pub. And we weren't even talking about Brentford, because we were just saying, look, we've got so many players out, you know, it's just the way it goes. But we were actually talking about Nottingham Forest, quite surprisingly, because we were talking about Steve Cooper. Some of the fans are going, well, why this is a Brentford podcast? Why are they talking about Cooper? It's just, again, it's a point of football discussion. You know, Steve Cooper was at Swansea when we had the little beef with them over the two playoff games that we had with them. We ended up winning in the end, of course, because we actually got to the Premier League and they didn't. Steve Cooper then ended up going to Nottingham Forest. Some people will say a bit of a basket case of a club, because they had so many managers that they sacked and bringing in so many players in. Again, that's a point of opinion as to whether they are or whether or not that's the right tactic to use. But anyway, that's been called. And he went to Forest, and by all means, he's actually kind of saved them. They were bottom of the Championship when he took over from them, had hardly any points, and then he rescued them, got them up the league, and then got them through and promoted via the playoffs and the fans absolutely love him. I'm not being funny. I'm telling you the stage, I've got loads of Forest mates, and you cannot say a bad word against Cooper. So when we turn around and say, as Brentford, we hate Cooper, I mean, it's like you've insulted their mother, you know, or their father. You know what I'm saying? It is actually quite bad. So now we've got a scenario where Cooper's had a pretty bad run. He lost again. I think it was last night they lost the game. They lost again to Fulham. Okay. Then they lost again to Fulham, and quite badly to Fulham as well. The Forest fans are giving him a bligh. They're just saying, listen, Cooper, this is the way it goes. You saved us. We love you. But apparently he came over. He sort of applauded the fans. He said something in the post-match podcast saying, you know, look, I don't know. Whatever the club wants to do, that's up to them. You know, I don't control that. And all the Forest fans are resigned to Cooper leaving, and they're devastated.
Well, you know, it's always good. It's always interesting, rather, to compare ourselves to the clubs that we were competing with to get out of the Championship a few years ago. So, I mean, it's almost 4 years ago. You think about it, you know, we sort of become used to our surroundings now. But yeah, just comparing Brentford, the way we do our business, the way we recruit, how much we spend on players, and you know what brings success and what doesn't bring success. At other clubs, and you know, as an outsider looking in at Forest, you know, you can see how much money and how the churn of players, and it's just not working. And you know, you're right to point out when Cooper was at Swansea, there was obviously some playoff beef. We beat them to get promoted into the Premier League, and there's obviously the playoff matches the season before. When we lost to Fulham ultimately at Wembley in lockdown. So yeah, it is, you know, and the club's ownership model, you know, there's obviously talk this week as well in some quarters about Matthew Benham being open to outside funding, some, you know, selling part of the club. How big a news item that is, or how seriously, or how much is it being, the club's being touted or not, or it's just a question that he was asked in a recent BU interview and he's mentioned that in the past. But comparing Brentford and our ownership structure, and then Forest and their ownership structure, and how they're almost like a dictatorship, we seem to be much more stable. You know, when there's risk or there's talk of that changing, it's obviously that's concerning as well. So, yeah, I mean, you have to keep an eye on what's going on at clubs our size, or clubs that have been through a similar trajectory to us, to kind of just see what else is going on. It's good to have one eye elsewhere, as well as kind of just, you know, concentrating on your own team as well.
Yeah, and sources are saying about Cooper, because like I said, a lot of people, a lot of Forest fans, you know, overnight, you know, when we came back here after staying out rather late, actually, we watched Match of the Day about 2 o'clock in the morning. Then we were sort of flipping through and seeing what people were saying online, and the Forest fans had basically said he's gone. You know, we could see that was his last farewell. But the word on the street is, from sources up there, is that he's going to be given at least one more game to try and save his position, which means we're sort of saying that maybe he's going to be given to Christmas, maybe, or maybe just after Christmas. They've got a sort of a strong run of games, you know, between now and then. Not particularly the easiest run of games that they've got. You know, they've got Wolves away, then they've got Tottenham at home, then they've got Bournemouth away, and then they've got Newcastle at home, and they've got Man United at home between now and the end of the year. And then it's the FA Cup, which I don't know what's happened for the FA Cup. I don't know what's happened to them there. I don't know who they're playing, or if they're playing anybody, to be honest, even though in the third round, I don't know if the team they're going to play got disqualified. I don't know what's going on there, but anyway, that's not the point. So we shall see. Forrest, just quickly, we're going to talk about this point as well that Laney just mentioned there, Matthew Benham, because a lot of people actually come up to us and asked us the question, you know, is Matthew Benham selling the club? We're going to say this as well, that we haven't done we haven't gone into to asking the question as we you know, we have done back in the past, because it's one of those ones where, you know, we believe, again, it's when somebody takes an interview, and then you not saying you make more out of it than you can do, but it's one of them situations where it's an interview that happened, and you can construe the words whichever way that you want to. I believe what we do know is, and we've said this before, and the people that have been listening to us for, you know, to the podcast for years, you know, when Brentford were in the Championship, we had a very firm plan that we wanted to get to the Premier League. That plan was kind of, you know, one of the elements of that plan at one stage, that we decided to shut down our academy because our academy was taking us up a lot of money. A lot of money, and a lot of our players, like I said to you, were going elsewhere after we spent a lot of money on them. And it was felt that we needed to focus the money from the academy into the Premier League because we only had a finite amount of money. You know, and I think after we, you know, had failed, we got a close but no cigar, particularly years. Matthew Benham, and this is for a fact, he said he was open to bids. And I think he's always open to bids for people to come and say, actually, we would like to invest in your club. At that stage, we felt that maybe if we were competing against these other, inverted commas, bigger clubs like Derby County and at the time Sheffield Wednesday, who were putting truckloads of money into trying to get up, they're cheating at the time as well, but that's a separate issue. And we had to try and compete against that. We were finding it maybe quite hard because we were trying to do it the natural way. We were trying to do it our way. Matthew Benn said...
And building a stadium at the same time without Premiership money.
That's right. So we were trying to do all these things. And Matthew Benham said, you know, look, you know, I'm open to bids. And there was one stage where we actually did entertain. And again, this is not sort of going a top secret story, but we were entertaining a group out of China. I can't remember the guy's name. Chen, possibly. Again, Ben Bland as well, who was one of our, you know, besotted crew, who actually lived out in Hong Kong at the time. He actually did a little bit of work on this, and he knows very much about that whole deal. He was working for the Financial Times at the time, and he knew quite a lot about the deal. And so he was speaking from the Chinese side of things. So we were kind of getting information from that side of the game as well as kind of getting information from our side. And what happens is that Benham said, look, I'm open to the deal. They had talks and they had sort of kind of chats about what they do, and there was money that we'd said that we'd offer a percentage of our club, which was I think less than 50%, and I think the figure might have been around 30 million or so. Okay, and the deal kind of was, you know, looking about it, and then it kind of went a bit cold, and then they went off and they ended up and went and bought Barnsley. So the same owners went and bought Barnsley, and they got 100% of the club, I believe, for about 5 million. So the difference in the deal was just quite massive. So they could have bought into Brentford, possibly, if the deal was done, but they decided to buy into Barnsley. But now we've got the situation where we've actually got up, and now the club's thriving. It's doing really well. So obviously it's worth a lot more than the sort of 30 million for the 50%, you know, that was offered at the time. So it's quite interesting.
I mean, and the chat, I mean, in the pub last night and before the game was obviously we were talking about this. And we were, obviously it's 2-2. Does 2-2 equal 10? Is David Beckham interested in investing in Brentford? That's kind of where we were thinking. You know, obviously there's absolutely no evidence to suggest that that's a story, but David Beckham has been watching his son play in the Brentford B team. He's been spending a lot of time in our part of West London. He's been down at Staines numerous times, at Wheatsheaf Lane, at Wheatsheaf Stadium, watching his son play. And you can't be around teams like Brentford, a club like Brentford, for too long without falling in love with it. And that might sound a bit overly romantic, but
you're romantic, Laney.
Yes, I am. But we all know there's something truly special about our club and how we've achieved success. And you know, you see, you know, Gary Neville and Carragher bouncing around, you know, after those brilliant early Premiership wins, them commenting about the atmosphere at the G-Tech, and then people kind of sharing in the good vibe about our success. I mean, it's been derailed is the wrong word, but you know, it's an injury crisis kind of at the moment, so this season's going to be probably a little bit of a write-off. But overall, you know, the Brentford story is one where outsiders kind of are captivated by, and you know, that's why the Brentford Revolution book needed to be written, and people are fascinated, other clubs are fascinated about how we achieve success. Beckham, I'm sure, is interested because he's the kind of character, is at the stage of his life now. He won't just go along and watch. He wants to be part of. You know, he's got time to fill. He's got business ambitions to achieve. So, you know, it was similar to when, you know, we mentioned about Christian Eriksen being available. You know, it started off just about it all makes sense. Why wouldn't they? And in the end, that happened. So, you know, obviously Matthew Benham has also sold FC Mittelland. who he transformed into a tiny little Danish outfit, into title winners in Denmark, and then Champions League qualification, Europa League and Europa Conference qualification. European football has become an annual event now for FC Midtjylland, and he's just sold the club to the richest man in Denmark. Now, you know, is there conversations happening there as well? So there's before we start worrying about being sold to Saudis and being sold to Chinese outfits, and you know, our club being changed forever, perhaps hopefully if there is a new revenue stream that comes in, it's from a source similar to one of those two.
Yeah, and that's about, I think that's the balance up that we talked about last night. I mean, the Beckham thing was merely, like I said to you, it was just merely a chat that we had. I mean, obviously, you know, I know a lot about, you know, MLS and sort of been delving into the MLS over the years.
But you heard it here first, though.
That's right, we did. The MLS here. Interestingly, because David Beckham, you know, there's a question as to whether or not, you know, how much money David Beckham has actually put into Miami, or whether or not he's, you know, been the face that's fronted things up, which has helped to take Miami and MLS to another level. And he's been able to bring in investors himself, as opposed to him putting in his own money. So those are all the questions. I know also a lot of people that I said to you on the MLS front who said that David Beckham, basically he had a period where he did just like he just didn't go to any games. Him and Victoria and them lot, they literally just weren't, they weren't even around. They just didn't do the Miami thing. But all of a sudden, when Messi's popped up again, he's back in the frame and he's like going to all the Miami games again, unsurprisingly. So you know, like I said to you, but then afterwards, you know, you can't do every single game, because if you're down at Wheatsheaf Lane in Staines half the time, how are you going to be sitting in Miami Beach? I mean, that's a big question, isn't
it's
it?
It's a good rumour though, isn't it? You like that rumour?
Ah, oh, it's a lovely lady. So like I said to you, there's lots of different possibilities. I think the thing that we sort of discussed, and this is what any Brentford fan would be all so fearful about, is anybody, once you get somebody else coming in, there's always that fear of change. The club changing, what the club's all about is changing. They start bringing in different people, they start bringing in different rules, they've got different ambitions. You know, yes, you could see the fact that, you know, Brentford have been going out for, you know, sort of, you know, we were pushing the boat out this summer, going for sort of kind of 30 million, 35 million, even 40 million euro players, right? We didn't land them as such, but we, you know, that was a situation. And maybe we're in a scenario to say where, you know, we could do one or two things. We can actually do what we do and get £150 million a year, whatever it is, for the next 4 years, and then we can put that money in and compete, because we're not going to go and blow the bucket as some teams have done and gambled, like, you know, even like the Villas of the world and that, you know, they've blown the money straight away, and Villa can argue, you know, we've got away with it, look at us, we're doing really well. They can either do that, or maybe they'll take the investment now, or say now in the next year or so, and be able to actually kind of go up to that next level a lot quicker. So those are the questions you asked me about, like I said to you, the fear from Brentford fans is that our club is as it is, we like it as it is, it's growing slightly organically, okay, it's quite fast because we're in the Premier League, but as soon as these kind of things happen, you know, all of a sudden, are things going to get ugly? Is the club just not going to be like it was before? And is that going to turn off some people from our current fan base?
It's the next step. What is the next step? You know, what's the next step for ambitious club owners and directors of football and managers? So the next step for Brentford is clearly to qualify for Europe. And then we saw back in the summer that some of the players that we were trying to buy, they weren't really going to come to us, because the clubs they were at were already in the Champions League or already in Europa League. So there is a barrier. The caliber of player that we are now sort of shopping for will take us to that next level, that Brighton level, let's call it, where, you know, they're a European qualified team that have come up the same route as us. So we do need to then start spending 40 million euro pounds on those kind of players. I mean, it's still their numbers are, I think, are slightly, I balk at them still, because I know our history, I know where we've come from, and, you know, bucket rattling and stuff like that. It just seems odd that we're still talking about that kind of money and those kind of players and the word Brentford in the same sentence. But that's where we are, and if we want to be sustainable here, and we want to be successful, and, you know, we have to match the ambitions of the people that have made that success possible, then that's where they want to be shopping next. And, you know, we probably do have to qualify for Europe. It's not going to happen this year, I can't see, unless it's some sort of miracle, because we just haven't got the depth of squad and the injuries that keep mounting, as we've already mentioned. So it's very much about next year. And, you know, if although we're getting $150 million a year in from the, you know, the TV and the Sky and the world rights packages, that's only three players, and maybe that's not enough, and maybe we've been so good with our FFP the last few years, maybe we're able to, you know, go out on a bit of a spending spree within our rules. So I'm nervous, because as you rightly say, change is sometimes inevitable, but change is also worrying. I'm obviously concerned that our club could change, but it has already. We just have to make sure and trust in the people that have done what they've done and taken us to this level, continue to do it in a similar style, in an intelligent and it's a stylish way. It's a, you know, the way we treat people, the way we do our business seems to be very different to a lot of clubs, and long may that continue.
Yeah, and just the last point I want to say on this as well, and the irony about this is when we're talking about where we're buying players from and, you know, competing against, you know, on the European front, say, for example, a lot of the teams that we're actually either trying to buy players from or competing against, and I'm not sort of saying this in a biggish way, it's as a team, the way that we play football, we're actually, you know, better than a lot of them. And again, I'm doing this on the, you know, because it's virtual, on the Belham World League table that he did, where you're matching teams against each other on, you know, in Europe and even in the US and everything like that. When you start matching them and they start using the stats to see it, you could see kind of where we stand. And this is basically a testament to actually how strong a league we're in. You know what I'm saying? You get down to 8th, 9th and 10th place, you know, teams that finish in 10th place in the UK are, you know, a lot stronger than some, you know, teams that finish in third place, say for example in the Dutch league, you know, and all these other places who still get into Europe, because and you know, FC Michelin, say for example, yeah, they're doing very, very well, but how do we match up against them as a team? We're actually probably stronger than them as a team, but they'll get European football because they're that's the league they play in. You can only, you know, you qualify in the league that you play for, you know what I'm saying? So that's the scenario. So they have the chance to get players maybe that we might not be able to get to because they're playing in Europe, because they're playing Champions League, and it makes it harder for us because we're actually playing in a really tough league. So listen, we're not moaning about it, we're just kind of saying these are kind of the struggles that we have. So is Matthew Bellum going to sell up Brentford? We've got no idea, but I'd like to think that because he is a Brentford fan, he talked about his son also taking over and being chairman at some stage as well, you'd like to think that if there was any money injection going into the club, he'd do it in a systematic way. He'd do it in a way which actually worked for the best interest for everybody, including himself, including the club, including the fans, everyone like that. So yeah, let's just watch this space as we can, because we've done no delving around, but maybe we might have to start sniffing around a little bit to see kind of what the score is.
Beckham watch.
Yeah, let's go. Let's little trip to Miami. I mean, like the last one we did Dundalk a few years ago. You know what I'm saying? But we have to go up a level. Let's run up Miami. Yeah.
See you there next week, mate.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, we'll just go there just after Christmas. We'll be doing the buy of West London from Ocean Drive, like I said. But anyway, listen, forget about Ocean Drive. We're looking at the ocean here at the moment now, and Laney's going to be going off and driving a little bit later. You like that, actually, Laney? You like those?
Yeah, very good. Yeah. Slick.
Thank you very much, actually. You know, I prepared that one earlier. Not at all. But anyway, we're going to go back. We're going to talk about the games at the weekend, the Luton game. We're going to talk about the Brighton game after this break. So, it was almost like, again, we talk about this joy and pain, sunshine and rain. There's no sun. There's lovely sunshine yesterday, Brighton. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But the joy and the pain. Saturday was joy. We played Luton Town and we got a right good result against Luton Town. Bit of a banana skin, or potential banana skin as well, because Luton Town are one of those teams who have come here to disrupt in the Premier League. Everyone expects them to get points off them. So, I mean, they're playing them like, we're playing Luton, so definite 3 points. But we know when you play teams like Luton, they're actually kind of causes problems. And Luton came first half of the game, and the first half of the game was pretty stink. It's something that, to be quite honest with you, we're not going to really talk about too much, because there's not much going on. Luton came with a game plan. They didn't really kind of venture too much into anywhere near our goal, because they wanted to come to stifle. And the thing that's probably slightly concerning, you realise
how our injuries affected us, we didn't really have anybody who can unlock that Luton defence, unlock that team, do something which was kind of different to unlock them. And so we kind of just came up against a brick wall. But second half, Maupay got a goal early on in the game, and that just opened everything up. And that's just the floodgates. It was proper floodgate action after that. And, we got a 3-1 win. But, you know, it was good. And I know Laney, Laney wasn't quite there for the game, but he was loyalty bonus points was he was there because he managed to get there. Because you were on the way back from Iceland.
Yeah, I was flying back from Iceland. I went there for a quick trip, and the delays, the fog, and the all the flight chaos meant that I landed late and the blah blah. I won't go into the dullness of the logistics of getting out there, but there was time to just make the last 10 minutes, and I did that. Got the tube to Northfields and got an Uber waiting for me, and they dropped me off near one of the stadiums, so that was all good. So yeah, technically I didn't miss the game, but I kind of missed all the action. I watched all the highlights back, the extended highlights. It looked scrappy, you know, we edged it. They came to defend in the first half, and we needed to score the first goal. We did that. We were strong enough to beat teams like Luton, and you hope that we're strong enough to beat Sheffield United on Saturday. But where we're going to come up short with you know the injuries is when you play the better teams. And you know what the good thing is that we competed with one of the better teams last night. It was all about the result, not necessarily performance when you're playing Luton. But we saw what Luton are capable of, because they pushed again one of the better teams all the way. They almost got a point against Arsenal. David Raya helped them out big time midweek. And Luton
and Liverpool as well
should have held out for the result against Liverpool as well. So yeah, they're capable, and they're a very tricky opponent, and I think they stand a very good chance of surviving. And it's going to be tight, but you know, so as I said, it was all about the result, not necessarily the performance. What we do know is that we are now scraping the barrel, to your word, as well. We are reaching for more than fringe players. We're now dipping into the B team now to get players, fit players to fill a competitive starting 11. Fortunately, they look up to the job. You know, they stick to the same system. They have not let us down. They don't look like rabbits in the headlights. People like Miles Pert-Harris came on and got minutes last night. Now, you know, is he a starter? Is he really first team ready? Well, I think we'll have to find out up at Sheffield. So, you know, Yarmolov got more minutes last night and against Luton. So there is a silver lining, because these fringe players are getting Premier League minutes, and we find out whether they can come in, whether they come in and, you know, keep us as competitive as we are with our better players. And if they're not, that's when the decisions are made in the summer and in the general transfer window, whether we have to go into the transfer market. Now, with my eyes, I'm suggesting we do need to do that. And I'm sure the powers that be are thinking that as well. So, you know, although it's not ideal to be down to the bare bones, that at least it's an experiment to see how strong and how deep the squad is.
Yeah, and so, I mean, just going back to that Luton game just quickly, you know, Brentford's strengths, they created a high number of chances relative to our possession. We also effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities from the flanks and also goal-scoring opportunities from set pieces, and we were strong at finishing. We actually didn't have any significant weaknesses. A good game for the Bees, actually. A large quantity of possession in the Luton half. We attacked through the middle and we dominated possession. As for Luton, they were effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities through individual skill and also through long shot situations as well, but they lost the ball often. They favoured long shots. They attacked down our their left hand side. They favoured crossing the ball and they favoured long balls. Again, if you look at the ratings and whoscored.com, Neil Maupay, who scored his goal as well, he's very happy that he scored his goal. 8.4. So, like, top rated Neil Maupay as well. Then Ben Mee was 7.9. Shandon Baptiste was 7.4. They had Jacob Brown, who came in. I think as a sub for Luton as well. He came in 7.4. And Christian Norgard was 7.2. Again, annoyingly, he got the yellow card, which put him out against the Brighton game, which we'll talk about in a little bit, which I think affected things quite massively as well. all the shots, you know, Keane Lewis Potter, to be fair, 5 shots he had on goal as well. Mbeumo, 4 shots, and Mount Play, 4 shots. Ben Reeves, central defender as well, 3 shots. And Wiese had 3 shots as well. And Norgaard again shows how much we miss him. You know, the most tackles with 4 tackles in that game as well. Frank the Tank with 3, Yarmolik with 3 as well. So, you know, it just kind of shows you where that game is going. We kind of were doing the right things in all the right areas. Tell you what we're going to do as well. We're going to go over to the fans, listen to what they had to say for this Luton game, but also we're going to go to the Brighton game that we went to down at the Amex to hear what the fans had to say about those two matches.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good result. Deserved result. Kept the ball better than them. Every time they got the ball, they gave it straight back to us. Bit of a hard watch at times. First half we dominated. I think they scored with probably their only shot on goal up to that point, but as in a typical Brentford style, we did seem to make it a bit harder work than we needed to.
Yeah, they really came with a game plan, and it was to put 10 people back and stop us trying to get through, but I thought we kind of backfired a bit, because once we got the goal, they had to come out, they had to change their game plan completely, and they actually looked quite dangerous. You know, they got a goal, they almost got a second, and they looked dangerous. So I don't know, if they changed their game plan and actually came at us a bit more, they might have done a bit better. But we played well. I think we needed that little bit of creativity that Jensen gives us, which we were lacking, but we kept at it, and once we got through them, we were fine. You know, 3 goals against a very defensive team, it's pretty good stuff.
You know, I don't want to be a teams like Luton, but actually, Luton are a team that Brentford should be beating at our stage that we are in where we are in the Premier League. And you know, we got a bit nervy at 3-1 sat back, but yeah, we'll do all right. Luton, I'll be interested to see how they get on for the rest of the season.
I thought we did all right overall. It's one of those games where you could easily not have got 3 points, and we're fairly comfortable other than the 5 minutes after the goal. Flecker didn't make a save, including the one he maybe should have made. But overall, I thought, again, don't forget, same injuries we got today as we had last week. It's still second string.
Yeah, I think this is one of those games where you appreciate Frank, right? Not only for the way Thomas plans the game, but clearly there were some words politely shared or not in the dressing room at halftime, and they came out playing much differently, much more aggressively. They looked a lot more cohesive, even body language-wise. Neil was on the ball rather than flapping his arms at other players. So I think they looked totally different. They turned it quite around. They were on the front foot and making passes, which were missing in the first half for sure.
I thought, Matt, for me, man of the match probably Ethan Pinnock, but I thought it was a great performance by Godos, stepping in at the last minute for Aya. I thought he played really, really well. Good to see him get a good run out, and Shandon coming on, having a good run out. KLP was fantastic when he came on, running at them, creating the last goal. And I think, I know you can always want something different, but if we'd have had players like Rico running at their back four, I think we would have absolutely annihilated them. But it is what it is, and it's 3 points, that's all you want.
The goals today, good. Second half performance, great. First half, you know, wasn't so great. It was a bit, it's like an old throwback to the old League One in some respects. But at the end of the day, we got the 3 points, and that's all that really matters.
We've just been riddled by injuries. Brian going off removed our main attacking threat, and we did okay, but Brighton were always going to win that, I'm afraid. it's disappointing. But I mean, the team we ended up with there, it looked like a pre-season friendly in the 90th minute after we'd made about 18 substitutions. What can you do?
We did all right considering the players we had out there. You know, they didn't let us down. We've lost by one goal again. I don't really know what more that team could do. You know, it's hard. You know,
I think that the team put a lot of effort in, and there's no doubt that they're trying their absolute best at the moment. But we've got so many injuries; it's really, really tough. The kind of good things to take away from that game, where I thought when Damstad came on, he looked like a much kind of different player than what we've seen before. Maybe the player we want him to be. It's good experience for Yarmolyuk. It's good for Baptiste to get minutes. It's good for Onyeka to get minutes. But it was a tough game.
I think we accept Brighton are a good side. I know they've got injuries as well, but it's a tough place to come. They're in, you know, not amazing form, so it feels like a little bit of a missed opportunity. But you know, I think that to have 19 points and be 11th with the injuries that we've had this season is a remarkable effort. Obviously, we know the bottom three and the bottom four with Everton's points deduction means there's quite a bit of a cushion, so we don't really have too much to worry about. I think it's a shame because of the injuries. I mean, we could have made a real push for Europe this season, but the injuries combined with Tony's suspension just means it was never going to happen. So I still think, you know, 11th where we are at the moment is it's been a really good effort, so I don't think we can be too disappointed. Hopefully turn up Sheffield United on Saturday. We get a couple of early goals, I think, you know, we should win that. So, I don't think you can be too disappointed.
I didn't expect anything more today. I thought we might probably lose, but what a great performance. There's still that bond in the team. There's still, like, togetherness. So, Saturday, go forward. Come on, the bees. We're going to beat Sheffield, yeah?
There you go, the fans from the Luton game. And then looking at the Brighton game, which was, like I said to you, that's the pain, joy and pain. The pain of that Brighton game, and the reason why there's pain is, tell you something, it started off really lovely day, like I said to you, you know, sea, you know, sitting here looking at the sea for half the day, then taking a walk down the beach, meeting Beast characters on the seafront. It was a beautiful sunny day. The sun was out, it was warm, it was almost t-shirt weather. It was, and then, you know, and then having a few beers, meeting up with the Bees before the game, then having the nightmare to try to get to the station, which was bad, but not that bad. We had to get the buses because obviously there's a train strike, and like I said to you, you know, myself, I'm not going to go into the, you know, train strikers, they have to do so. It puts you out for, you know, a day or 2 days or 3 days. It was a pain, but we just had to deal with it, and we dealt with it. We got up to the stadium. Let's just put it this way, if that stadium was in the centre of town, it would have been less of a pain. I think the pain is more the fact that that stadium is out of town, so it's caused all sorts of problems for all sorts of people. People who are in town, people who are driving in from out of town, it's just caused problems anyway. So that's, there's talks about the Brighton Stadium, and a lot of people are talking about how they hate it, how they don't like it, and you can see why that, you know, why that is.
Yeah, I mean, everyone, well, most people should know the history of Brighton, so for them to have a stadium in Brighton or close to Brighton is, you know, is all important. So
I mean, not everybody knows the history.
Well,
just quickly,
you know, so Brighton got into financial shenanigans and difficulties in the late 80s and early 90s, which made them have to close and shut the Goldstone Ground, which was their traditional home in Hove.
Just around the corner from here.
Around the corner from here. So then they were nomadic for a little bit. They had to go and play at Gillingham,
which is miles away.
Which is ridiculous. 75-80 miles away, probably.
That's like Brentford playing in.
It's like Milton Keynes. It's a long way. Yeah. You know, it was just awful for them. Their fans, you know, they were getting like 1,000, 1,500, and then they came back and played in an athletic stadium, the Withdean,
just up from Preston Park, which is terrible.
Just as you drive into the city
from the motorway,
it's tucked away in a residential area on the right hand side. So yeah, it was grim. And we were talking last night, actually, Brighton's not a great place to come and watch football. Brighton's a great place to come. I love the city. It's a great city, but you know, the out of town
stadium
around, getting a train to Falmer and then waiting, queuing up for
you know, buses and trains back in to then get all the way out again. It's a ball ache. It really is.
And it's interesting because we're talking MLS, but it's actually very American. Yeah. I mean, again, you know, I've been to multiple stadiums in America watching baseball, and watching, you know, American football, as you call it, you know, and watching soccer as well. And their experience is very much an out-of-town experience. You know, you go to the old Rojo Robbie Stadium, as it used to be called in Miami. It's called, I think, the Hard Rock Stadium now, or something like that as well. You know, it used to be the Orange Bowl, which was in the centre of town. Then they moved to out of town, you know, all the way really far, like, I think 100th Street or something like that, you know, 5 miles away. And you go out there, and so Americans are used to driving, putting their car down, putting the boot up and doing all this kind of stuff, whereas that's not really our culture, you know. Charlotte is one of the few stadiums, actually, which is bang in the middle of town in America, but it's quite a rarity. So it's kind of that sort of culture breeds a different type of football experience, and I think maybe that's the reason why a lot of Americans, when they come over, they actually like the British football experience, because you go to Chelsea, which is bang right up in next to a tube station right in the middle of London, and Brentford is still right in the middle of Brentford, which is, you know, accessible, and it gives it more of a community vibe rather than a kind of, let's just shove them out somewhere and let them just do them stuff out there.
Just makes you very grateful the way things have worked out for us. You know, there was talk of us going to Western International Market, which would
be Hayes, that's in Hayes,
which would have, you know, Brentford would have had that out of town kind of vibe. Luckily, you know, we're, you know, less than a couple of miles away.
And we said, and we also said no to Woking, didn't we?
We did say no to Woking.
No.
Yeah, and Feltham was another one that was, you know, mentioned when under the 1-0. So yeah, it makes you grateful that we've got a, you know, great stadium that's still in the heart of the town that, you know, our club's named after. So, but yeah, I couldn't do that every match, I don't think, to go through that. And it made it even worse. You know, as soon as it was a train strike, I think that game should have not been played. But there you go.
But Amazon had paid the money.
Obviously, with our injury crisis, it was suited up not to have played that game as well. But that's a different matter. We had to play the game, and we did all right at first half. We started off soaking it up, and there was a couple of dangerous breaks, and we got a penalty from the first one. It happened at the far end of the pitch, so it makes it difficult to kind of see what happened. And it looked like Yanel burst through, got taken out just inside the area. There was a big long VAR pause. We obviously, inside the stadium, you've got no idea what's going on. I didn't even see a VAR check come up on the scoreboards. And I thought the referee was about to award a free kick outside the area, because you can't see, and you're not the best views to see a Premier League game is on TV, unfortunately. So the ones that didn't go to the game, they probably knew exactly what was going on. But Brian Bumo, he dispatched that beautifully. It looked like a little toe poke into the bottom left hand corner, and he put us one up. The lead didn't last very long, and then that Gross scored the equaliser, very, very well taken goal, and he gave it the biggest to the away fans.
That was really weird, wasn't it?
Really odd.
That was really weird.
It was a kind of a flat atmosphere all the way around the ground, really. You know, it was difficult to get songs going, because, you know, it's just a wide open away end where you're not all gathered together. But for him to kind of come over and be giving it the shush, and kind of, you know, a bit like Morpay, what he does when he plays Leeds. It was just a bit, what?
Unnecessary.
What's that about?
Yeah. You know, so, and talking about the atmosphere as well, just to butt in there as well, lady, because as you say, the atmosphere was flat. I mean, from Brighton, it was very flat. I mean, there was no singing going on there whatsoever. The Bees fans were trying to sing. I noticed that little bit of beef opened up between the Brighton fans and the Bees fans, as it does, because I think the Bees fans criticised Brighton for basically having a nice stadium with a terrible atmosphere.
Football in the library,
which is one of the songs that we were singing as well. And you will sing on our own as well. And then the Brighton fans gave it back by saying, well, you weren't much better. You know, your support was terrible. You know, you didn't even sell out your allocation, which wasn't necessarily true. I can't answer that yes or no, but we had a lot of people that didn't make it into the ground until the second half, because the traffic was so bad, because they had to make it also down to their ground, which is in the middle of nowhere, which causes all sorts of problems. But that's a different story altogether. But yes, there's that beef. But then, officers, I noticed it had opened up, because we opened the podcast talking about Nottingham Forest. There was previous beef between Brighton and Nottingham Forest a couple of weeks ago, where apparently the Brighton fans are saying, so Brentford fans are telling us that we don't sing enough, but apparently when they went to Forest and they celebrated because they beat them, 3-2 at Forest, and the team came over like the Brentford team and started singing and chanting and all jumping up and down, and they were celebrating like they won the FA Cup, like, you know, in a Steve Slade style. Apparently the Forest fans told them they can't celebrate. So apparently the Brighton fans are really confused because they're not sure whether or not they should celebrate too much or whether or not they shouldn't celebrate. You know, listen to the Brentford fans or listen to the Forest fans. I think they want a little bit of an adjudicator to come in to tell them exactly what to do. Yeah. So that's a little bit of piss taking going on there by the Brighton fans. But yeah, the atmosphere was a bit flat, and it kind of led to a whole kind of flatness just over the evening, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it just felt like it was an inevitability about we were going to probably lose. Once Brian and Bumo had hobbled off, and you know, I really hope it's not as serious as it looks. He walked off very gingerly, you know, with a physio on either side of him just to give him some support. So if he's rolled his ankle, just hopefully it's just not ligament damage, and it's something that they can, you know, let him rest a week or 2 weeks maybe, and he'll be fit for. For him, I imagine he wants to go to the African Cup of Nations. For us, you know, missing him for a chunk of January as well is going to be really difficult for us to cope with. But obviously, you know, you've got to hope that the player reaches his ambitions in the game. But getting back to the match, you know, I mean, although we'd lost 2-1, you know, I'm looking at the league table and the teams above us, you know, leaves us in 11th, but. You know, look from the top downwards. Arsenal, they beat us, but we only by a single goal. Liverpool, they beat us by more than a single goal, but it wasn't a 3-0 game. We pushed them all the way. Not played Villa, not played Man City. Taking a point against Spurs, should have taken a point or one against Man United. They only beat us by a goal. Newcastle only beat us by one goal. Brighton only beat us by one goal. And then West Ham we beat, Chelsea we beat, and then it's us. So we're even with the
patchwork.
The patchwork, yeah. We're still competing really strongly against the best teams in this division, and that's we ought to take a lot of gratitude credit. From that, and a lot of credit for that. And it does bode well.
Yes, it does. Just quickly, just coming back to this game, Brighton's their strengths. They were effective at creating goal scoring opportunities from set. Pieces. Their weaknesses, they gave away a lot of free kicks around the box and also committed a large number of individual errors. They had a large quantity of possession in our half and attacked down the left-hand side. For Brentford, we stole the ball from them quite a lot, and they said that actually we didn't have any significant weaknesses, they said, in that game. We favoured long balls as well. The top performers of that game, in a sort of comparison to the Luton game, this one, they were all Brighton. You know, Jack Hinshelwood, who annoyingly scored their goal, their first goal, and also cleared the ball off the line as well. The second goal, the winning goal as well. The goal of the line. So he got 8.3 as well. He's the son of the Worthing manager. And again, we've got sort of Worthing Bees. We were out with them yesterday as well, from a part of the South Coast Bees posse as well. So I've been down to Worthing down with them, and I've seen Worthing play football. They play some very, very good football down at Worthing as well. You know, and I've been down there, like I said, quite a few times. I saw them when they were in the Isthmian League, and when they were in there, and I said to them, this team, they're going to go out, and they smashed that league that season, and they went up to the Conference South the following season, and they got to the playoffs as well. They're playing some great football down there, and their manager plays some great football, and obviously he's produced a son who obviously plays some good football as well.
His mum might have had something to do with it.
Yes, so he does. And there's Mitoma, Grove, Sir Adinga, and Julio, all the top players as well. As opposed to the Luton game, where we had 27 shots and Luton had 7 here in this game, Brighton had 18 shots, we had 8 shots as well. We're going to go to the Beast Breakdown in a minute, and he's going to give you more of a tactical and statistical lowdown. But that game, in effect, it's kind of, we did what we had to do, but we pretty much ran out of steam.
Quick one. This isn't a dig at Flecken, but It doesn't give me the impression that it's going to take something truly special to beat him. Like, he does seem flat-footed a lot, and I don't know. He doesn't impose. He made a couple of really good saves, and you know, credit where credit's due. His distribution was decent at times last night, but as I said, Some goalies I look at and you think it's going to take something truly special to beat them, and I'm not sure his positioning and the way he sets off and he dives at times. He just seems to be static. And if you place the ball either side of him more than a pace away, it seems to find the bottom corner of the net. I'm not sure how springy he is. But, you know, again, he didn't do anything wrong. I can't really point the finger at him for any of the goals, you know, last night, or the goal we conceded against Luton, or necessarily the ones that we conceded against Liverpool. But it's, he doesn't look unbeatable at all.
No, and talk about stats-wise as well, because there's always been a little bit, you know, listen, we're not digging him out, but listen, we've got to discuss these things. And, you know, the question marks were there as to, somebody's saying, will he keep a clean sheet? I mean, he's kept a few clean sheets. Will he make a save? I think it's there's certain saves which you expect to keep to save, and they don't. Because at the end of the day, yes, he made some great saves, but that's his job, you know, he has to make a save. Now, when it comes to stats, listen, again, at Besotted, we do the stats thing. Okay, we've got, like I said, your B's breakdown coming in the chat in a little bit about the stats and facts. But we also look at stats of the players, right, and what they're doing as well. So the stats on Fleckham. Basically, as the goalkeeper, he is, I think, the second or the lowest ranking keeper in the Premiership, Premier League, when it comes to shot stopping, goalkeeping. So he has let in on an expected goal sort of ratio, sort of three more goals than he's expected to. Okay, and he's at the bottom of the league. Okay, him and also it's the Brighton keeper Steele as well. So they're both at the bottom with roughly about three goals more than they should have done. The top of the league, ironically, is actually the Luton keeper, who has actually sort of saved six more goals than he's expected to as well. So he's kind of keeping them in the game, but we're at the opposite end of that, so we can't let him bring goals. So, like I said to you, I think there's question marks around there, and a lot of people are saying, you know, it's fair play, the club are backing him. And they're playing him the whole time, and maybe it's because at the moment now, you know, we are kind of a mid-table club, and, you know, those three goals that goes around the whole season, you know, they don't feel it's going to affect our league position as such, so you don't throw a person on the bus, but you just give them as much experience as possible. But it is a little bit worrying.
It's, you know, we have to raise those concerns and what we see with our own eyes. You know, it's important. You know, he will be given time. He's just in his, you know, first season. He's come over from a different league. It's a different way of playing. I'm sure he'll come good, but, you know, it's something that we on a Brentford podcast should be talking about.
And just one final thing, we just want to talk about that. Obviously, we had injuries, but when Brian and Boomer came off, it was like, oh god, here we go, here's another one. There's actually a team being published as a team of basically Brentford injured and suspended players as well, okay, from that Brighton game. So we've got Ellery Balcombe, okay, on the right wing, we've got, on the right back, we've got Aaron Hickey, on the left back, we've got Rico Henry, centre backs, we've got Collins, and we've got Aya as well, at CDM, we've got Norgaard, then we've got De Silva and Jensen doing the little pivot in there as well, then we've got Brian Boomer on the right, Shardon on the left, and Ivan Toney in the middle. So basically, these are the players that are out. They've obviously formed their own team, which is actually a pretty bloody good team there as well, isn't it?
Yeah, they're surviving the Premier League as well. Yeah.
and the rest, like, you know, so that's the players that are out. So that's kind of what we're up against. But anyway, listen, we're going to go over to the Gala, the Bees Breakdown Posse, okay? And we're going to talk to the Bees Breakdown Posse, is going to give us the lowdown on the Luton game at the weekend, and then look forward to the Sheffield United game.
Hey, this is Jacob Galler with Bees Breakdown. So for that Luton review, Brentford had a dominating performance, and they ended with their second highest XG on the season at 3.5, while also holding the most possession at 67%. The Bees also allowed the lowest expected goals against at 0.2, so Luton really didn't create that much going forward. They only recorded their first shot in the 62nd minute, and for much of the match, they were just dropping into that low block. They ended with 30 passes per defensive action, or PPDA, which just shows that Luton rarely applied pressure. And Brentford, on the other hand, they recorded their lowest PPDA of the season at 4.86, which just shows that Brentford's counter-pressure was very effective. Alright, so now for that Sheffield preview. They're currently last in the Premier League, and the underlying numbers suggest it's a fair placement. They've only created 10.8 XG, which is the lowest for any Premier League team, while allowing 30.8 expected goals against, and they're even massively underperforming that by actually conceding 39 goals. Similar to Luton, they're allowing high percentage chances, and they have one of the worst save percentages in the Premier League, which just leads to them not recording a clean sheet so far this season. They also, they're a very direct team, and they've struggled to create chances going forward. They have the fewest goals, shots on target, and they have the longest average shot distance. So expect some similar tactics to the Luton match, where Thomas Frank's just going to try to stretch their width by attacking the wings and holding much more possession. Brentford will want to score earlier than they did against Luton, just to open the match up a bit and create more chances.
There you go to Gowler giving us the lowdown. Tell you what though, just to bring things up a little bit, we're going to go to JB to give us some facts and some funk. So we've got some stats and statistics and then facts and funk all thrown in at one time. Here you go, JB.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming.
Who?
JB. And he's ready to stock it to you one time.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall back again. Brighton away remains one of those Premier League fixtures we've yet to get maximum points from, with just one out of a possible nine. They've never been fruitful visits, as in total we've made 34 league trips to Brighton, losing over 60% of them. Against Luton, we scored 3 goals in the second half, having scored none in the first. That's the first time in a league game that that's happened with fans at the G-Tech. Although we went from 0-0 at half-time to beating Huddersfield 3-0 in September 2020, it was behind closed doors. The last home game with fans was the memorable 3-2 against Millwall in October 2019 at Griffin Park. The Luton game was Brentford's 300th in the top tier, 210 under Harry Curtis, with 90 under Thomas Frank. Our trip to Sheffield will show us Thomas's 250th game in charge, only our third manager to reach that milestone. Whereas the first 250 for Harry Curtis and Malcolm McDonald were all in the third and fourth tiers, Thomas's have all been in the top two tiers. But it's injuries that were again the main topic of conversation this week. Every game this season needs 20 players, 11 starters and 9 subs. So in this era, we need to have the largest squad of players we've ever had. It's therefore tricky to compare numbers of injuries in seasons when squads were very much smaller, as there were fewer or even no subs. The care of players' injuries for the long term was also overlooked in the past in favour of the quick fix, with the magic sponge being the extent of on-field treatment. However, this season we're missing an average of just over 7 players per game, plus of course an average of over 1 for suspensions. So statistically, so far this season, the 7 are more than double the average number of players missing per game from over the last 40 years. And therefore, this season is the worst for injuries in our entire history.
So there you go, Sheffield United. We're going up to the Blades. I like going to Blades. It's one of them original, old school games. Good stadium, good fans, good atmosphere, good place to go out. Looking forward to it, actually. I'm going to steer this as well. You know, we're going to just looking forward to going to it because it's a game where the Blades are, you know, they're down and out. They've got a new manager, so it could be quite an interesting day out, isn't it, Laney?
You know what's going to happen, don't you?
Yeah.
I know. They hemorrhaged 5-0 to Burnley at the weekend. So Higginbottom got the old heave-ho, and Chris Wilder, their sort of manager who's had a successful time at Bramall Lane before. He's back. He took his first game back last night, and they apparently were a lot tighter. They ultimately lost to Liverpool 2-0. But you know, they were playing one of the strongest teams. So there was obviously an uptick in performance yesterday. When you combine them getting a little bit better and us being literally unable to piece together a recognisable strong Brentford team, you kind of fear the worst a little bit. Now I take a point right now, I think, but there's a lot of Brentford fans, rightly as well, expecting to go there and win. I think we're capable of doing that, and we're capable of losing as well. You know, it's literally how our pieced together team approach the game and whether they take the chances. So anything can happen up in South Yorkshireville, and I'm looking forward to the trip, but I'm more wary this week than I was last week about
going. 100%. So let's go over to Ian Rans from the Four Blades in a Pub podcast. So basically, they're doing a podcast, they're in the pub, and they're four Blades. He's going to give us the lowdown on the Blades.
Hi there, this is Ian Rans from the Four Blades in a Pub podcast. Sheffield United season ticket holder for the best part of 35 years. Love to talk about the Blades, and had a good chat in the last 12 months with a player that's, you know, popular with both Bees and Blades, the legendary Bob Booker, hero of my teenage years watching Sheffield United, and he gave us some great stories and some great times he had both at United and at Griffin Park as well. So, coming on to the match between the two teams on Saturday, I mean, how do we feel about it? You know, United, promotion last season was probably, some may argue, overdue. I guess, you know, the squad we came down with from the Premier League was strong by Championship levels, but Slavisa Jokanović really struggled to get a tune out of them for the initial part of that first season after relegation, and really we expected to bounce back possibly, but when the call came to bring Paul Heckingbottom back into the club, he'd stood in as caretaker, stepping up from the academy when Chris Wilder left. We were pretty underwhelmed, to be honest. I remember going on local radio at the time, and both myself and Dan from the pod were just questioning, is this really ambitious enough, given him a five-year contract, the best part of a five-year contract at the time, was a big ask, I think, of him. And really just smacked of a lack of ambition, really, that we weren't looking more broadly outside of the club as a whole. And it felt like just to revert back to more of the same. He proved us wrong. He proved us massively wrong. We had obviously a push that just fell short in that season he took over. And then last season, you know, there's a lot of history being rewritten over the last few weeks around Paul Heckingbottom. You know, how could he fail? Well, Slavisa Jokanović was failing with that squad. We had a couple of real talents, and certainly one lifetime talent in Illiman and Jai. And, oh yeah, those players, they kind of covered him. They dragged the team through. He didn't really have any tactics. Well, you don't finish 12 points clear of third in the Championship if you don't have tactics and you're reliant on, you know, one or two star named or one in particular star player. So, you know, I think this season's been difficult. He was starting the season, he was given a water pistol in a gunfight, and I think they turned the water supply off. You know, we sold Illiman and Jai and Sander Berger so close to the start of the season, and really we were in the transfer market for the pick of the Championship players. You know, I think Gustavo Hamer was a great signing in most of our eyes, and played so well for Coventry last season, a key part of their near success and near return to the Premier League. And we signed Cameron Archer, who'd had a great loan spells at Preston and most notably Middlesbrough from Aston Villa. And yeah, that was probably the limit of our ambitions. We brought some cheaper signings in from overseas, but realistically, we weren't shopping at a level that led us to go into the season to have any great expectations. I think the thing that's really disappointed us over the last few weeks, though, has been a lack of fight. I think Sheffield United fans can accept that we might not be good enough in matches, that there are most likely 17, 18 teams better than us. But what we don't accept is a kind of weak-willed dangling of legs in tackles, just a lack of belief. And unfortunately, that's what the team had become. We'd come close, we'd kept matches tight against, you know, Manchester City at the start of the season, but conceding two late goals at Spurs when leading, the 8-0 game against Newcastle, which at the time you put down as an aberration. It was a collapse, but equally Newcastle scored with every chance they had. You'd hoped we'd bounce back a little bit. Results against Wolves at home, a win, Brighton a point away. Unfortunately, we just masked over the fact that the team were on a downer. And however good a job Paul Heckingbottom had done, And however much I believe and others believe, some others believe that the club is got its problems right at the very top through the running of the club into the squad. When things are as they are, there's only one thing you can change, and that's the manager. And sadly, he had to go. The big question is, who would replace him? And I think most of us have known, even from the start of the season, that Chris Wilder was waiting in the wings for that opportunity. It's a very bizarre situation to be in as a fan base, as a club, to see Wilder coming back in. There's mixed opinions. I think when he came out onto the pitch, yes, there was cheering and chanting of his name pre the game against Liverpool, but really it was muted, I think, compared to what people might have expected. And I think that's partly down to the low in which the low the club is in and the fan base is in as he comes in, but equally with how things ended last time, and perhaps how things were when he returned with Borough as a visiting manager at Bramall Lane. So what going into Saturday, what could we look at in the Blades squad? As I mentioned, we've made those signings from the Championship and they've fired intermittently in games. Chris Wilder's shown a willingness to change the team around midweek, bringing a youngster, Andre Brooks, in for his first start from the academy into a midfield role. So we might see some things different. Ollie Norwood got dropped as a result of that change in formation as well. And obviously we're missing a couple of those ex-Brentford players. John Egan is out with a long-term injury, captain. Jack O'Connell having sadly had to retire from football after that injury that probably prevented him getting an England call-up in that season, sort of interrupted with COVID. So, we've lost some experienced players through injury. We've lost McBurnie again through a ridiculously stupid suspension. And we are coming into that match probably in I wouldn't say as decimated with injuries as Brentford are, but certainly with a team that is lacking some of its better players, who is finding its feet under a new manager. But there were positive signs, at least against Liverpool, of some fight, some competition, and with a bit of luck on some of the decisions leading up to the goals, where VAR didn't intervene amazingly, and where we had a bit of better composure in front of goal when we had chances ourselves, it might have been a different result. So what do I think about Brentford? It's difficult. I'm delighted Mbeumo isn't available. My fantasy football team isn't, but I am. And looking down the team, it's hard. I always see Brentford not as a team of star name players, but a team that's greater than some of its parts. And that's not to dismiss individual players as, not being good players, just that the way in which Thomas Frank sets the team up, everyone knows their role, everyone delivers, and you're a good, solid mid-table Premier League side, and all credit to Brentford for that. I do think, however, that going into Saturday, we've probably got the best chance of picking up 3 points that we've had for a few games, and that's not disrespecting Brentford, but recognising there are changes, that Wilder will have had more than a day's training with our squad. He'll have learnt a lot from watching the game against Liverpool. I do worry how much we've left out on the pitch against Liverpool midweek. But this could be the start of something for us, and we've got to really get behind the team as a fan base at Bramall Lane and make it intimidating and challenging for the team that Brentford are able to put out. And look, a win, one swallow doesn't make a summer. A win doesn't necessarily make me think we'd do anything to stay up. It's a tough ask, even though, we're still in touching distance of the rest of the teams around that bottom five. It's going to take some effort from where we are as a club, with the feeling within the club to do that. Is Chris Wilder the right man? Time will tell. It's either going to be absolutely brilliant this next period, or it could be an absolute show. We'll see. So good, on to Saturday. How will the game pan out and result? I'd love to think we could pick something up. I'd worry that we probably haven't got the goals in us to do that. I'll go for a score prediction of a 1-1 draw. But yeah, looking forward to welcoming the Bees fans up to Bramall Lane, beautiful downtown Bramall Lane, on Saturday. All the best.
So there you go, Ian Rans, and slightly nervous there because, you know, they were basically down and out, sat their manager, new manager comes in, they're looking a little bit more organised. Okay, they still lost the game, but they're looking a little bit more organised, and they're coming to play us, who literally, I mean, we just got to pick some names out of the hat as to who's going to actually play for us, because like we're all over the place, like, you know what I'm saying? So, Blair's strength is protecting the lead, but their weaknesses, how much time you got? Finishing scoring chances, aerial duels, defending corner attacks, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas, keeping possession of the ball, defending against attacks down the wings, defending against long shots, defending against skillful players, defending set pieces are all very weak there as well. Their style of play, long balls, attacking down the right, they like to take long shots, they play with width, they're aggressive, they play in their own half, and they play the offside trap. So that's kind of giving us the vibes as to kind of what we need to do against the Blades. In principle, if we had our regular team, we'd be like, okay, yeah, happy days, you know what I'm saying?
100%, yeah.
But we're putting our hands up to say, actually, look, this game could go either way.
Yeah, it can, and if it does go the wrong way, then, you know, obviously there's mitigating circumstances, you know, and I'm not going to, you know, you never want to see your team sort of approach a game thinking, you know, it's damage limitation. I don't think it's that. I think, you know, we do go there, and we stand a really good chance of picking up at least one, if not three points. So, but they will be fighting for their lives. They will see this game as an opportunity in front of their own fans to get, you know, go ahead and to build on that. Wilder, he's a good man motivator. He's a nice bloke. He knows the city. He's loved at the city, and he stands a better chance, I think, of getting a few points between now and Christmas. I still think they're way too weak to survive. But they're gonna rally a little bit, and I think it's a game that they could rally and actually, you know, do well in on Saturday. It's up to us to shove a spanner in the works.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm looking forward to go up to Blades. I mean, if a lot of people that may not have been there before, it's a really good away day. Good people up there, good footballing people as well. Really good places to go out and have a drink before good and after pubs. The game. Really, really good pubs on the way down there as well. I think we're going to be in the Beer Engine as well, which is cool for Bees fans. It's not an official one, but our Blades mates have actually sussed it out. They said, come down. So this is what we're going to do. It's fairly near to Bramall Road as well, which is all good. But there's loads of other places that you can go to in and around them. I know some people like to go to Kelham Island, but there's also loads of pubs in and around just staking their way down there. So we're very much looking forward to seeing Scroffs and seeing Bram and seeing Reg and seeing Mark and all our Blades characters who, unfortunately, we're not going to say this because maybe they may say themselves, but we would like them to be in this division for another season because it's a good away day, but we should see how that goes. But, Laney, just got to ask you one final thing. A score prediction, please.
I'm going to go 1-1 draw.
Okay, I'm going to go 2-0 to the mighty Bees. Yes. So this is all good. So like I said to you,
prefer your score.
Yes, that's right. Okay, so this is good. So listen, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast coming to you by the sea. Literally, we're sitting there watching the waves breaking in front of us as well. So yeah, so it's made us more zen. It's made us more chilled after that game last night and trying to get to and from the Brighton Stadium, which is just, it's not great in the best of times, and it's even worse when there's no trains running. But listen, we're cool, we put that behind us, we're going to Sheffield on Saturday, looking forward to a good night out in Sheffield with our Sheffield chums, looking forward to that. But like I said to you, you know, we've got injuries, we're through,
come on you Bees,
come on you Bees, come on
Brentford,
Bees by the seas, indeed.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan,
turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.